From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Ahead of President Donald Trump's decision on reimposing sanctions on Iran, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accused Tehran Monday of covering up a secret nuclear weapons program.
First, Iran lied about never having a nuclear weapons program. 100,000 secret files prove that they lied. Second, even after the deal, Iran continued to preserve and expand its nuclear weapons know-how for future use. Third, Iran lied again in 2015 when it didn't come clean to the IAEA as required by the nuclear deal. And finally, the Iran deal is based on lies.
He displayed what he described as an Israeli intelligence coup, copies of documents, charts, blueprints, photos, and videos documenting the Iranian nuclear program. U.S. Secretary Mike Pompeo said the documents prove Iranian leaders lied to their people, but stopped short of saying they have violated the 2015 nuclear agreement. President Trump, who must decide on sanctions by May 12 Monday, said he watched some of the prime minister's speech.
That is just not an acceptable situation. And I've been saying that's happening. They're not sitting back idly. They're setting off missiles, which they say are for television purposes. I don't think so. So we'll see what happens. I'm not telling you what I'm doing, but a lot of people think they know. And on or before the 12th, we'll make a decision.
The head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization warned against reimposing sanctions, saying his country is prepared to enrich uranium at a high level. The International Committee of the Red Cross Monday said 10 aid workers who disappeared last week in South Sudan have been freed. The South Sudanese nationals were kidnapped when their convoy was intercepted in the southwest near the town of Yei, the second such abduction of aid workers in less than a month. This is VOA News. President Trump Monday said he has suggested his proposed meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un take place along the demilitarized zone separating the Koreas.
We're looking at various countries, including Singapore, and we are also talking about the possibility of the DMZ, Peace House, Freedom House. And there's something that I thought was intriguing. I think that some people maybe don't like the look of that, and some people like it very much.
Peace House is where the two Korean leaders met in a rare summit last week. The president said he hopes the historic meeting, expected to deal with denuclearization, will take place in late May or early June. The de facto leader of Myanmar, Aung San Suu Kyi, met Monday with a delegation from the UN Security Council over the plight of nearly 700,000 Muslim Rohingya refugees who fled a security crackdown to Bangladesh. Earlier, they met Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina, who urged Myanmar, also known as Burma, to take them back.
We want that they should put more pressure to Myanmar government so that they take their citizens back to their country.
The UN delegation also met leaders of the Myanmar military before planning to trek to Rakhine State Tuesday, scene of the security crackdown. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights Monday said the Syrian government bombarded the rebel-held town of Rostan and surrounding villages. The bombardment was followed by a brief pause designed to allow rebels to evacuate to the north. Former banker Sajid Javid, who has been named Britain's new Home Secretary, replacing Amber Rudd, who resigned over revelations that members of the Caribbean community known as the Windrush Generation, who have lived and worked in Britain for decades, were being refused medical care or threatened with deportation.
Learning about the difficulties Windrush migrants have faced over the years has impacted me greatly, particularly because I myself am a second-generation migrant.
Javid, the son of Pakistani immigrants, is the first ethnic minority politician to hold one of the four top posts in the British government. The first of dozens of Central American migrants from a caravan entered U.S. territory seeking asylum Monday after a month-long high-profile journey. Vice President Mike Pence said they'll be processed within the law, but also spoke of the need for immigration reform.
We have to close the dangerous loopholes, the kind of provisions in catch and release and chain migration in our entire system that essentially entice people or entice people that would take advantage of vulnerable families to encourage them to make the long and often dangerous trip up to our border.
The migrants from Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala claim they're escaping persecution and gang violence. Somalia's parliament elected one of the country's former defense ministers as parliament speaker. Mohamed Mursal Abdirahman replaces Mohamed Sheikh Osman Jawari, who resigned ahead of a confidence vote motion against him. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, the first day of May, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has met with President Donald Trump in Washington.
The government of Nigeria remains deeply committed to the principles of human rights as well as promotion and protection of people's freedom, even in the process of fighting terror.
Meanwhile, President Trump says Nigeria is a partner and leader in the fight against terrorism. A vocal critic of former Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe may run for mayor of Harare. Zambia's government accuses main opposition leader of political naivety. And South Sudan's government denies official pillaging of the national treasury for foreign health travels.
It is not the office of the president that does that. Whoever is sick and medically referred writes to Ministry of Finance, and it is the Ministry of Finance that does it, not any other person.
Michael Makuye, South Sudan's information minister, and Kenya bans a lesbian love story movie ahead of the Cannes Film Festival. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa.
United States.
U.S. President Donald Trump attempted Monday to reset his relationship with Africa when he hosted Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. President Buhari is the first African leader to have a White House summit with Mr. Trump, who has been criticized for reportedly making derogatory comments about Africa. During his public remarks with President Buhari, Trump focused mostly on common goals and shared interests, such as fighting terrorism and expanding trade. First, on trade.
The United States is currently working to expand trade and commercial ties with African nations, including Nigeria, to create jobs and wealth in all of our countries. We hope to be the economic partner of choice for nations across the continent and all around the world. I hope all African countries and countries throughout the world that we also will be supporting you and that they will likewise support us in our bid, along with Canada and Mexico, for the 2026 World Cup. We will be watching very closely, and any help that they could give us in that bid, we would appreciate. I'm pleased that Nigeria is one of our largest trading partners in the region, and we look forward to growing our trade relationship based on the principle of fairness and reciprocity. President Buhari has also taken several steps to fight corruption and improve the Nigerian business climate. These measures will make it easier for Nigeria and the United States companies to invest.
Mr. Trump thanked President Buhari for Nigeria's partnership and leadership in the fight against terrorism.
Nigeria was one of the first African nations to join the coalition to defeat ISIS, and Nigerian forces are currently leading regional efforts against ISIS in West Africa and doing very well, as we have. Nigeria is also leading African nations in the fight against Boko Haram, another ruthless jihadist terrorist group. You've been reading about them. They kidnap the young girls and young women, many of whom never are seen again. We're also helping our Nigerian partners by facilitating intelligence, cooperation, and providing training and military equipment to Nigerian forces. For example, we recently sold Nigeria 12 U.S. A-29 Super Catano aircraft. It's a great aircraft. In the first ever sale of American military equipment to Nigeria, these new aircraft will improve Nigeria's ability to target terrorists and protect civilians.
An official of Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party told VOA Monday the party wanted Mr. Trump to ask President Buhari about human rights abuses in Nigeria, including attacks by Fulani herdsmen on Christian community. Mr. Trump told the Nigerian leader the U.S. was deeply concerned by religious violence in Nigeria.
We encourage Nigeria and the federal, state, and local leaders to do everything in their power to immediately secure the affected communities and to protect innocent civilians of all faiths, including Muslims and including Christians.
For his part, President Buhari thanked the United States for its strong support in Nigeria's fight against terrorism.
We recognize the strong United States support in our fight against terrorism and also appreciated very much the United States agreement to sell 12 Super Tucano A-29 warplanes and weapons to Nigeria to effectively fight terrorism. As part of efforts to address emerging cases of insurgency in the country, the Nigerian military adopted counter-terrorism insurgency approach codenamed Operation Safe Corridor to de-radicalize, rehabilitate, and reintegrate willingly surrendered Boko Haram members into the larger society.
President Buhari said his government was doing all it could to secure the release of the remaining schoolgirls abducted from Dapchi and Chibok.
We are doing all we can to secure the release of the remaining abducted school girls from Dapchi and Chibok. In this context, we will continue to welcome United States collaboration in intelligence gathering, hostage negotiations, and information sharing. The government is taking necessary steps to promote the peaceful coexistence of herdsmen and farmers by focusing on boosting security and enforcing legislation that will guarantee borders and farmers access to land.
Nigeria's main opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, had criticized President Buhari and his government for turning a blind eye to human rights abuses in Nigeria. On Monday, President Buhari said his government remains committed to the principles of human rights.
The government of Nigeria remains deeply committed to the principles of human rights as well as promotion and protection of people's freedom, even in the process of fighting terror. We commit to ensure that all documented cases of human rights abuses are investigated and those responsible for violation held responsible.
President Buhari thanked the United States for its cooperation in helping Nigeria recover stolen Nigerian funds.
Our two governments have put the machinery in place for their respective attorney generals to collaborate in ensuring the return to Nigeria of over $500 million United States dollars of looted funds siphoned away in banks around the world. In this connection, we congratulate the United States government on launching a Leptocracy Asset Recovery Initiative, which was spearheaded by the United States Department of Justice Asset Forfeiture and Money Laundering. We hoped that we could continue to count on United States support in this area.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari speaking Monday at the White House. The South Sudan government is denying claims by a Sudanese medical doctor who says he was once a consultant to the South Sudan government. He says officials are pillaging the national treasury for foreign health travels. Dr. Mawian Akot told VOA South Sudan Focus program on Monday that officials get between 50,000 and 100,000 euros for medical checkup abroad. Dr. Mawian says such amounts are usually approved in the office of President Salva Kiir. But Information Minister Michael Makui says while some government officials may seek medical help abroad, it is usually the finance ministry that approves all medical trips, not the office of the president. He says Dr. Akol's claims are all an attempt to defame the office of President Kiir.
Definitely, you don't expect anything good about them talking good about the government. This is a mere statement which is not substantiated. Yes, it is true, abroad for medical treatment. But it is not the office of the president that does that. Whoever is sick and medically referred writes to Ministry of Finance, and it is the Ministry of Finance that does it, not any other person. That is one. Number two, of course, we in South Sudan, our hard currency for transaction is not euro, it is dollars. So all these which are said by this doctor, but he wants to, in a way or the other, to defame the office of the president. There is nothing like that. The president does not give. The president asks for money from finance, not from his office. So that is not true. As for medical referrals, those who are medically referred are usually taken up to Ministry of Finance, not by anybody else.
Do you know this Dr. Mawien Akot? Do you know him or does the government know him?
I don't know him, but he alleged to have been a consultant. And what happened thereafter, where did he go?
You don't know him or no one in the government knows him?
I don't know him. Maybe you can ask his colleagues, the doctors, but for me, I don't know him.
Why do you suppose he's talking now? If he says he was a consultant, why do you think he's talking now?
Well, he's talking because if he was a consultant, he might have been removed. And as such, he decided to talk that way. This is one. Number two, he must be a rebel, as I stated earlier. And if he's a rebel, then it is not strange that he talks like that.
So does President Salva Kiir have a serious health problem?
Who said that he has a serious health problem? Salva Kiir is well, he's very healthy, he's performing his functions and duties normally, and even today he mentioned from IGAD. So who is that bewitching him? There is nothing like that. That is a mere lie. These are people who are bewitching him. So this is what I can say. And if there is anybody as such sick, then this man must be somebody bewitching him, and that is not correct.
Okay, this money to go for overseas treatment is approved in the office of the president. That is not true.
It is Finance which approves any payment, not office of the president. Then makes its submission to the Ministry of Finance as well. So that is not correct.
And you are saying that you don't know this Dr. Akot?
I don't know him, of course. I don't need to know every civil servant in the Republic of South Sudan.
It is strange that he has come out to be talking. I don't know. It's very strange. Why? Why is he talking? Are you saying that the claims by this Dr. Akot are false?
The claim by this doctor is not true. He's just writing because he might have been disappointed somewhere or he has rebelled. And as such, he can say whatever he wants to say.
Michael Makwe, South Sudan's Information Minister, who is speaking with me from the capital, Juba. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, the first day of May. Daybreak Africa time is 17 and a half minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe pastor Evan Mawarere was a vocal critic of former President Robert Mugabe. Now, he has decided to run in local government elections this year and possibly seek the job of mayor of Zimbabwe's biggest city, Harare. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
From pulpit to politics, Pastor Evan Mawarere is wading into the electoral fray in Zimbabwe. He and other independent candidates have joined forces to run for local government posts in the coming elections. They call their coalition the People's Own Voice. Mawarere has his eye on the mayor's seat in Harare. Should he win local government elections?
Up to today, we still deliver very dirty and very dangerous water to the residents of Harare. We have got potholes. Our road network is completely dilapidated and needs to be revived again. We have issues in the city of Harare to do with refuse collection. We still don't collect our refuse for people, and that encourages all sorts of diseases. And I think we those are the kind of things that my generation feels urgently.
Mawarere rose to prominence in 2016 as the activist behind the This Flag movement that organized protests against rights abuses by the government and former President Robert Mugabe's handling of the ailing economy. He was jailed several times. He was later acquitted on some charges of subversion, while others are still pending in court. The polls expected this July and August will be the country's first without Mugabe, who resigned under military pressure last year. Analysts say Mawarere's entry into politics could spell trouble for the main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change. The MDC has struggled with internal divisions following the recent death of founder Morgan Tsvangirai. Word is that the MDC has already reached out Mawarere for talks, though VOA could not confirm that information. Sekai Holland, a former senior member of the MDC, welcomed Mawarere to politics. She did not indicate where her allegiances now lie.
The effort that Pastor Mawarire is launching with his colleagues is very significant. It's middle-class African kids whose absence from politics has caused many problems. Their coming in strengthens the processes of development, and it's important that they themselves understand that they are part of the fabric and not an independent formation. So they should dialogue with everybody.
Last year, Kenya saw a surge in the number of independent candidates in its nationwide elections. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu is accusing main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of political naivety. This after and for the second time, Mr. Hichilema has called for South Africa to show leadership in the Southern African region by finding a solution to what Hichilema calls injustices in Zambia. He says if President Cyril Ramaphosa does not act, Zambia could blow up, thereby negatively impacting the Southern African region. But presidential spokesman Amos Chanda says Zambia is stable and does not need any foreign intervention.
There is no political crisis in Zambia. There were elections in 2016, presidential by-election, if you like, was called in 2015 January, and the president won. The president won clear both elections, and Mr. HM has not accepted the outcome. That is not a political crisis. And there's nothing warranting intervention whatsoever. In fact, it's a laughable matter because the African Union observers, the United Nations, European Union observer mission, the Commonwealth, SADC, which South Africa chairs, including the African Union, Commonwealth, all of them declare the election free and fair. So what sort of intervention is he looking for?
His argument is that unless there's this intervention by South Africa, that Zambia could blow up any moment for now.
Yeah, it's quite preposterous and absurd in the extreme because Zambia is one of the most stable democracies in the region, and other countries are coming to learn from the democratic transitions that have taken place here, the stability and the extreme levels of political tolerance. There is no chance whatsoever that Zambia can blow up into what, from what?
That the opposition leader, though he has not recognized the election of President Lungu, the fact that he's appealing for international intervention on the part of South Africa, one would think that that is a positive thing.
There's no requirement in the law. If you as a citizen decide that the person who has been elected president, you don't like him, you can carry on with that view. The majority of the people who elected him will carry on and recognize him as president. So no one is losing sleep about Mr. Hichilema's view about the United Nations recognizes the president, SADC recognizes the president, the international community recognizes. So that is his burden. No one is worried about that in government at all. So it is a serious lack of understanding of how the international system works. South Africa cannot, under any circumstances, intervene in Zambia. Zambia is stable, it is functioning normally, there is no political tension. If you characterize polarization to mean that there are four or five political parties, yes, when one party adopts one ideology and another adopts another and another, that's polarization, that's healthy polarization. You cannot have one ideology. So Mr. Hichilema subscribes to one ideology, which makes him lose elections. He has lost at least five presidential elections.
President Lungu over the weekend was busy talking about that. Has been talking about the need to bring the church into the politics of, of Zambia.
Yes.
Meaning because of the election coming, he said that there's some the church should try to Christianize the Zambian politics.
Yes.
What does he mean by that?
Yes. Zambia is a Christian nation by constitutional declaration. In the preamble of the constitution, the country declares Zambia as a Christian nation. So he was calling upon the Christian leadership to make practical the declaration of Zambia as a Christian nation. So it is in that context that the president was inviting leaders of the church to participate more in politics.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Kenya has banned a new film by the celebrated Kenyan director Wanuri Kahiwi, saying it violates Kenyan law and morals. Her new film, Rafiki, is a coming-of-age tale of two girls falling in love, inspired by an award-winning short story by a Ugandan author. In May, the film will become the first feature-length movie from Kenya ever to premiere at the Cannes Film Festival. Viewer's Daniel Schaff met with Kahiwi in Nairobi and has this report.
Kenya's film industry will take another step onto the world stage when Wanuri Kahiu's film Rafiki becomes the first Kenyan feature to premiere at the Cannes Film Festival. But while Rafiki, which means friend in Swahili, is welcomed abroad, the lesbian love story won't be showing in cinemas in Kenya.
I'm incredibly disappointed that the film in Kenya was banned. If there was ever a time for Kenya to make a lead in Africa and to show that it respects freedom of expression and freedom of speech, it would have been now.
Kenya's film board says Rafiki's storyline promotes and legitimizes homosexual relations, which are illegal in Kenya.
There are areas that we recommended that they cannot be suitable for the Kenyan market. They could be suitable for Cannes, and it's a great movie, no doubt about it. The theme is relevant and it is true, but just like corruption or crime, the fact that they are happening does not make it right.
Kahiu refused demands to change the ending from a hopeful and joyful African story, part of a style she calls Afro bubblegum. Kahiu says the film is about speaking out for and humanizing sexual minorities who are often shunned in Africa.
We really hope that this adds to the conversation of the LGBT community in Africa. It is a voice that is not heard enough. And we hope that this film begins to open channels of conversation, of inclusion, and of freedom, and of unity of all. Abu.
This is not the first time Kahiu has broken new ground in Kenyan cinema. Her first feature film, From a Whisper, is a fictionalized account of the 1998 U.S. Embassy bombing in Nairobi. A terrorist is among the main characters. And before there was Black Panther, Kahiu was winning awards for her science fiction film, Pumzi, set in Africa.
I think it's incredibly important to have Afrofuturism as a subgenre, although I'd much prefer that there wasn't an Afro at the beginning of it. I really, really hope that at some point we're seen as equal humans without having to explain that people of color are different and therefore deserve a different genre.
Kahiu says she plans to appeal the ban on Rafiki before Kenya's constitutional court. Daniel Sheriff, VOA News, Nairobi.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. President Donald Trump attempted Monday to reset his relationship with Africa when he hosted Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. President Buhari is the first African leader to have a White House summit with Mr. Trump, who has been criticized for reportedly making derogatory comments about Africa. And that is it for this Tuesday, May 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Dave Magnus. I'm James Butte. Have a good day.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari meets with President Donald Trump at the White House on Monday, April 30th. We'll discuss their meeting and current U.S.-Africa relations on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.